Hello, everybody. You have tuned in to From the Hip Radio with Joe Dockery, a two-hour weekly podcast where you will hear great music, thoughtful commentary, and compelling interviews, along with features addressing a wide variety of subjects. From the Hip Radio will not only entertain, but Joe will encourage us all to appreciate the immense beauty that our life's journey together has to offer.
Well, thanks, Dan, and welcome, everybody. You know, this is my 10th podcast, and I'm going to be taking a month off after this one to conduct some more interviews for the next 10. In the meantime, I invite you to go back and catch up on any previous podcasts that you may have missed. You can find it all, of course, at FromTheHipRadio.net. Today, I'll be speaking with a fellow concert promoter and friend, Peter Seward, about his creation, Hobofest. Also, a story about my paper route, lots of music, and more. And a reminder that you can contact me at FromTheHipRadio@gmail.com if you'd like to comment, have a suggestion, or make a request. Okay, so here's some Amish irony. I'm a chiropractor, and for a couple years I would travel to an Amish community, set up a table in a home, and provide adjustments to the folks there. It's about an hour's car drive from there to my office, and they have difficulty traveling that far. So, once a month, they clippity-clop up to the farmhouse in their horse and buggies in 15-minute intervals. And one Friday, I saw a bunch of millers, yoders, and beachies. And when I finished in the early evening, I went out to my car, but it wouldn't start. Harvey Beachy was my last patient, and as I sat there wondering what to do next, he came out of the house, leaving with his 7-year-old son, who I also had treated. I stepped out of the car and said, "Hey, Harvey, my car won't start, and this is definitely not the place for a guy to have car trouble." Ha ha, we both laughed. And then he asked if I had jumper cables. "Well, yes," I said. So he walks over to his buggy, opens the tail end storage compartment, and brings out a battery. They use it for their buggy lights at night. We hooked up the cables to the two battery ends, and voila, the car started up right away. How about that? Car trouble solved by the Amish. I would have taken a photo, but the Amish don't like getting their photos taken, so I hesitated. But it was exactly how you would imagine. A farmhouse, various sizes of the exact same style shirts and pants hanging on a clothesline, scattered horse manure in the driveway, no other cars but a buggy and horse with blinders tied to a post next to the barn, setting sun on a balmy evening, dead quiet other than a distant moo, a father with a straw hat, Amish beard, suspenders, and a son looking like a mini-me Harvey without the beard. As the car idled, I held up my hand to give Harvey's son a high five, saying, "Hey, Glenn, your dad just saved the day." But he just looked at me quizzically, confused as to my raised hand. But evidently, my enthusiasm was infectious. He smiled, and then he laughed, proud of his daddy. I rubbed his head. Now that's hilarious. And that's Sam and Dave with Soothe Me. Now, this next song is most probably familiar to you, but I just want to point out a couple of sidemen that play on this cut. The drummer is Andy Newmark, and he and bass player Tony Levin, in my opinion, have had dream jobs. They're session musicians mostly, but they do go on the road when they feel like it. They've played with the likes of Sly and the Family Stone, B.B. King, David Bowie, Eric Clapton, Cat Stevens, Randy Newman, Sting, Laura Nero, Joe Walsh, Peter Gabriel, and the list goes on. So, not only enjoy this great song by John Lennon, but listen to this solid groove laid down by Andy Newmark on drums and Tony Levin on bass. Here's Watching the Wheels Go Round.
People say I'm crazy, doing what I'm doing. Well, they give me all kinds of warnings to save me from ruin. When I say that I'm okay, well, they look at me kind of strange. Advice designed to enlighten me. When I tell them that I'm doing fine, watching shadows on the wall. Don't you miss the big time, boy, you no longer on the ball. I'm just sitting here watching the wheels.
And that's John Lennon with Watching the Wheels Go Round. Now, I mentioned that Tony Levin was playing bass on that song. He may be most famous for his work with Peter Gabriel. So here's another song that you're most probably familiar with. It's Peter Gabriel's Salisbury Hill. But on this song, probably because it's played mostly in an odd time signature of 7-4, the groove is turned around a bit. Here, the guitar player provides the groove, backed by a steady quarter-note pulse, with the bass player and the drummer allowing to color things up around that groove. See if you can count the 7 beats of each measure. Here's Salisbury Hill. And that's Peter Gabriel with Salisbury Hill, his first hit after leaving the band Genesis. Now, here's a story that I wrote that I call Discoveries in Responsibility. The early morning was eerily quiet, coming from a family of 13 children, a quiet that could only be experienced at that hour. Every morning between the ages 9 and 15, I would rise at 5:50 a.m., long before any of my siblings, alone, but with my dad as he prepared for work and I prepared for my daily ritual of delivering the morning papers. I had to tiptoe quietly down 2 flights of stairs from my attic bedroom, clothes and shoes in hand, as not to wake my 3 younger brothers, nor disturb the rest of the clan asleep on the 2nd floor. The dim glow from the kitchen light and the menthol fresh smell of my dad's shaving cream slowly aroused my senses as I dressed among the stillness of the living room furniture. Walking through the kitchen, I'd peek into the adjacent half-bathroom and whisper to my shirtless, lather-faced father, "Hey, Dad." He'd whisper back, "Hey, Joe." And that's about all we'd say, knowing that we would have time to chat an hour later, me having finished my round and him returning from daily mass. After locating my Times Democrat paper bag hanging on the mudroom coat rack amongst an array of jackets, hats, boots, baseball gloves, I'd exit the house, stopping briefly at my bundle of newspapers dropped in the front yard. After snipping the metal binding and laying the papers in the bag, I'd throw the satchel over my shoulder. Grabbing the high-rise handlebars of my black Schwinn Stingray bicycle, it took only 3 rapid strides to gain enough momentum to hop onto the banana seat like I was the Cisco Kid in pursuit of wild western gunslingers. My first delivery was 3 blocks away, and riding no-handed along abandoned Grand Avenue, I had enough time to fold 4 or 5 papers into aeronautically efficient squares ready for sailing onto my customers' porches. Inevitably, a few would end up in the bushes, interrupting my rhythm, causing me to stop, hop off the bike, and retrieve the wayward missiles. The paper route had become a family tradition. My 3 older brothers delivered the same route years before, relinquishing the responsibility to the next in line like a rite of passage. I was too small to take over when the youngest of the 3 moved on, so the paper route was passed to the neighborhood boy. But not until my dad explained the condition that receiving the privilege required a promise to pass it back to the family when the boy retired. The opportunity came when I was 9 years old. Younger than most paper boys at that time, but neither my dad nor I wanted to miss the opportunity. I admired my older brothers and was very anxious to follow, literally, in their footsteps. After a few months, the novelty of having a job wore off, and I began to view the paper route as an unwanted chore, and it was a chore. I gave all my profits to my dad, who said that he was keeping a savings for me. Winters, they came early in Iowa, and morning temperatures during those months stay in the single digits and often fall below 0. Undershirt, then t-shirt, then flannel shirt, then hooded sweatshirt, leather jacket, stocking cap, scarf, gloves, 2 pair of socks, and insulated boots were typical clothing to face those brutal elements. With my scarf wrapped around my face and tied behind my hooded sweatshirt, with my cap pulled low upon my forehead, I exposed only a narrow slit for my watering eyes. The moisture from my breath caused ice crystals to develop on the outside of the scarf, forcing me to move my whole body when looking right or left, since turning my head caused my cheeks to get wet and chafed from the warm moisture on the body side of the scarf. No bicycle now. Too cold, too snowy, and walking increased the time of the trek to over an hour long. Not getting up to deliver newspapers? Never an option. The paper took no vacations. My 3 younger brothers were too young to assist, and my older brothers were either off at college or married. My 6 sisters were all assigned other duties, and my father spared my mother the mornings, letting her sleep in until the kids were off to school. Luckily, I was a healthy boy, reinforced, actually, by the paper route itself. I began building endurance both physically and mentally. The paper route soon became as part of my routine as going to school. I took ownership in the duty, and it began to give shape to what I would become. I enjoyed and embraced being alone with my thoughts, especially my dreams. I heroically made every game-winning goal, saved countless lives, and of course, I always got the girl. My interest in drumming began with banging on empty Quaker Oats oatmeal containers as far back as I can remember. Their cylinder shape made a perfect hand drum, and it didn't matter that the cardboard soon fell apart, because 13 kids, they can go through another box pretty quickly. Then when 3 of my friends in 7th grade asked if I wanted to be the drummer in their new rock and roll band, well, I jumped at that chance. The problem was, though, I didn't have a drum set, and I could not imagine my parents buying me one either. Economically, our family was entrenched in middle class, and the budget was a first priority of my parents. Anyway, I really thought this was just a fantasy talk among a few dreaming wannabes. But no, as the week in school went by, these guys made it clear that they were serious. Hey, wait a minute. What about my paper route money? I'd had the route over 3 years, but I had no idea how much I had been saving. Till that moment, the idea of profits was a concept as foreign to me as paying taxes. Till then, I never viewed the paper route as a job. It was just something I was destined to do, like playing Little League baseball or attending parochial school. There was no profit in destiny. But hey, wait a minute. Wasn't my buddy Kevin Coughlin buying all kinds of cool stuff with his paper route money? Well, it took days to muster up enough courage and self-righteousness to approach my father as he sat in his reading chair. Having secured the proper sympathy from my mom, I made sure that she was sitting close by. Hey, Dad.
Hey, Joe. What is it?
Hey, Dad. Mike McCabe, Gary Shapley, Kevin Jarrus, and me, we're going to start a band.
A band?
What kind of band do you mean?
A rock and roll band, Dad. McCabe and Shapley, they're going to play guitar. Kevin Jarrus, he's going to play bass, and I'm going to be the drummer, Dad.
As I had been saying, I'm going to be the drummer, first to my friends at school, then to a few siblings, and finally to my mother. The actual possibility of it seemed to be gaining speed with each declaration. The identity was fitting me perfectly, just like my fashion trademark of wearing worn-out flannel shirts that my brothers had discarded. My confidence grew so quickly that by the time I faced my dad, I really was a drummer. After all, it was him who made sure no one threw out those oatmeal containers.
Yeah, but Joe, a set of drums, aren't they expensive?
And without missing a beat, so to speak, I answered firmly, my paper route money, Dad. You've been saving that money ever since I started, and I'm sure I have enough money now to buy a set. I never really believed there was a specific savings. I just considered the arrangement fair, satisfied that the money I gave to my dad would come back to me 100-fold in sports programs, sports equipment, food, college tuition. Anything I really needed was always provided. But something told me I really needed this.
We'll think about it, Joe. Translation? Forget it.
I knew my dad well enough to know we'll think about it meant the discussion was over. So how surprised I was that the next Saturday afternoon my dad says, well, so Joe, let's just go for a ride.
Well, sure, Dad. Where are we going?
Oh, I don't know. I heard there was this drum store over in Moline, and I thought we'd just check out the prices. I figured this was my dad's way of showing me just how unreasonable my request actually was, and that I'd come back satisfied that real drumming would, in fact, remain a dream. But I was still excited. It was, after all, Ernie George's drum shop that he was talking about, and I had noticed that place time and again driving 7th Street. Walking through the door transformed me to an unfamiliar world, a world that, honestly, I felt I had no business in. I was speechless as I wandered in awe between dozens of sets on display in the cluttered shop. Ludwig, Rogers, Slingerland, and Gretsch. It was 1968, and these were names I'd seen on the Ed Sullivan Show and American Bandstand and Shindig and countless other variety shows. Concert posters and autographed pictures of famous drummers covered the walls. The heavy-duty hardware foot pedals and cymbal stands, they impressed upon me the seriousness of this merchandise. And the salesman's long hair and psychedelic clothing bore authentic witness to the culturally foreign environment. How much are these? I overheard my dad, standing behind me, ask a salesman. I had gravitated toward the cheaper sets, knowing that if I had any chance at all, it would be with the generic brands. And my dad was referring to the set that I had been transfixed on for about 15 minutes, the black and white gray tiger-striped no-name brand that looked just like Ringo Starr's. $150, the bearded salesman answered. A great price,
and they're on sale just for this weekend. Well, do they come with lessons? My dad asked. We'll throw in three, and we'll give him his first half hour right now. Okay, we'll take them. The drums, they were the first adult thing I had ever bought in my life. All other quality items were handed down or provided by my parents. And this drum shop was not a toy store where I was spending my birthday money on something that would be broken by the end of the week. This was a bona fide quality item store, and I had just purchased a $150 item with my own money. So, while I was busy concerning myself with subjects at school, territory rights at home, friendships on the playground, various sports, and all the other roller coaster activities in a young boy's life, there remained the one constant of the paper route. And through its consistency, its day-in, day-out repetition, and most importantly, its adherence to the principle of responsibility, I was able to reap an unexpected and incredible gift, a gift that I gave to myself. that was Queen with Radio Gaga, with the great Freddie Mercury on vocals. By the way, that song was written by their drummer, Roger Taylor. Now, today's interview has a definite local Saranac Lake vibe. So, to get us in the mood, I'll play this cut from a fabulous local Saranac Lake band. This village is a small place, and we all know each other. And I've had the pleasure of dealing with each member of this gang in jam sessions, music productions, and small gigs of my own. The band is Kraken Foxy. The creative force behind this ensemble is Mark Hofschneider. Mark loves 20s and 30s swing music and the gypsy jazz sounds of Stefan Grappelli and Django Reinhardt. Joining Mark is Sarah Curtis and Reedy Espada on vocals, Russ Mulvey on stand-up bass, Alex Markland and Bobby Davis on guitars, Wayne Davison on horns, and Jacob Stern on fiddle. Here's Kraken Foxy with Mark's original song, Drinking Red.
We sleep throughout the day in your cozy bed, all tucked away, resting up for tonight. Safe and snug, out of sight, thoughts of the banquet duty light, our occupancy's under wraps. Waiting for the sun to set, it's almost time, don't you fret, anticipation's part of the game. It's getting late, there's sleeping sound, coast is clear, just look around, time to file out one by one for the fun. Join us at the party tonight, meet us out for a nibble and a bite, almost time for the red to be drawn. There will be a party tonight, start things off with a nibble and a bite, drinking red till the early light of dawn. Sneaking, creeping to the mirror, better shed light so they won't feel, start off slowly then dig right in. With hop is raging, the red is flowing, thanks to our host we are growing, life is good, this joint is great. It's getting light, just one last drink, better make tracks, don't you think? Call it a night, another successful quest. Gorge on red, we waddle back, find a crevice or a hidden crack, safe and snug, a bug in the rug in the nest. Join us at the party tonight, meet us out for a nibble and a bite, almost time for the red to be drawn. There will be a party tonight, start things off with a nibble and a bite, drinking red to the early light of dawn.
Saranac Lake's own Kraken Foxy with Drinking Red. So now let's get to my interview today. We moved to Saranac Lake, New York in early 2012. Later that summer, there was a music festival held in town. It was an all-day affair that included multiple musical acts, food cart offerings, and just had a hip vibe. And having put on many shows myself while living in Stanton, Virginia, I took note of the fella introducing the bands, figuring He must be one of the organizers. His name is Peter Seward, and I soon found out that, yes, in fact, he and his buddy Todd Smith created the event only a few years prior. It was inevitable that soon after, Peter and I would become good friends. We're sort of two peas in the same pod. We both feel a need to give back to the community we live in, and we do so with the one passion that we both share, and that is music. Peter loves educating his audience with music they may not have heard before, and music that actually they may not seek out on their own. He likes to lead his audience toward unique musicians who he feels have a right to be known. And it's not just music that Peter promotes. He and his wife, Karen Davidson, host events at their performance space that range from classical music to political watch parties and presentations on racism and xenophobia. Peter is an artist and designer who paints portraits, and he's an illustrator for those secular saint candles now being sold in shops all over the country and on the web. Peter is an extremely interesting fella, and I know you'll enjoy our recent visit together. So I'm sitting here in my living room with Peter Seward. And Peter, as I mentioned in the introduction about how I got to this point with house concerts and festivals and that, what is your history of promoting music in the past? Did you do house concerts? Did you do concerts elsewhere? Or was Saranac Lake the first place where you put on a show?
Well, Joe, thanks for this invitation. And to get right to your question, before Hobofest, I was making recommendations to a couple local impresarios, Carol Vossler at Blue Seed Studios, mm-hmm. Scott Render at the Recovery Lounge, and they were the ones that took the risk of presenting something I was passionate about. And so I was dabbling in this equation.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, moving from New York City to the village of Saranac Lake, I was eager to have a say in what I wanted this community to be.
Cool. Now, just to give everybody an idea of other things that you do, you are an accomplished artist and a portrait painter.
I'm a representational painter, illustrator. I grew up in a family that is the profession. My brothers and cousins and even an uncle all are artists. And on Karen's side of the family, too, that's kind of uncanny that I married a woman originally from the Midwest like me, whose uncle and grandfather are professional artists. But my head has always been in music, and go figure, I sort of have more of an opinion about tastes of you know, like sizing a person up by looking at their record collection. And
I love that.
I really do feel like one's cultural identity is primary. Somebody else might say, you know, it's their political identity, it's, you know, their family, but cultural identity is very important to me.
How old were you when you left Cleveland and went to New York City?
So that would have been 1987, like the end of 1987. I sort of marvel, I was still in my 20s. And when I lived in Cleveland, I would go see any jazz act, you know, named jazz act that came to town or, you know, anything that was, you know, rock or... I wasn't quite into... I was just starting to get into folk and bluegrass then. And then for some reason, I was looking at Village Voices to see what was going on in New York before I even knew I was moving to New York. Mm-hmm. And then when I got to New York, I was sort of amazed that the things I was interested in, which are admittedly at the margins, didn't have thousands or hundreds of people seeing them. There might be a few dozen people in that room seeing them.
Right.
You know, I would sometimes take measure like, wow, this is a really important thing happening now, and there's a dozen people in the room.
So now, did you go to New York City to pursue your art, or did you go to New York City just because you were young and you wanted to experience a larger city than Cleveland?
Lucky me, my girlfriend at the time, sister, lived in New Jersey, and we made a few trips out there. So they were sort of reconnaissance, and she ended up getting a job. And she said, are you coming or not? So it was sort of happenstance, and I'm all the luckier for it.
Yeah, right, right. And then how did you make your way to Saranac Lake?
Well,
while we're on it?
At some point, I was running. I was doing long-distance running in Central Park. And I had an incident where I got mugged on my bicycle. Hmm. And I couldn't run because I had injured ribs. But I just started the hike and discovered that you could take a train or a bus out of New York City to the Hudson Highlands and Harriman State Park and do a day trip. And so in lieu of running in circles around Central Park, I started discovering New York State's trail infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And just by looking at the map, eventually saw the Adirondack Park and realized I needed to go up there. So I didn't have a family tradition of coming up here. And I feel really lucky to have, I was lucky to move to New York City. I was also lucky to move to New York State because New York State has the best of these worlds. You mm-hmm. know, big city, remote mountainous mountains and lakes that we live among. So Karen and I bought property up here before we knew we were moving up here. We were just looking for a foothold. It is living a dream to mm-hmm. have found a spot on the map that you respond to mm-hmm. and place yourself there. I love it up here, and you know, we're here to engage.
Make it a better place.
Yeah.
Well, now, when we moved up here in 2012, the summer came, and there was advertisements for an event called Hobo Fest. And so I went to it, and it was a small festival, and local musicians, regional musicians, actually, and then a headliner or two mm-hmm. of national musicians. And I just thought, now this is cool. And the whole community would come out.
Hobo Fest was born out of a collaboration and partnership between Todd Smith and I. And he started this little gallery at the train tracks in a building he was renting.
The train tracks here in Saranac Lake.
The tourist train mm-hmm. between Saranac Lake and Lake Placid. And I had an opportunity to have an art exhibit of my own at his gallery. And I said, you know, I have this unrealized idea of having music at the depot. I just thought some railroad-themed Depression-era, I was fishing for a name for it and settled on Hobo Fest with a little bit of nod to the economic disenfranchisement that many people go through, especially in the North Country, of like living a hand-to-mouth existence. And my idea was that musicians would service the theme of railroad culture, hobo culture, because there's a wealth of music directed towards it. So I didn't want people just playing their regular sets. I wanted them to adopt a thematic presentation, customize their presentation for the day. And if I was lucky to be able to pull off collaborations between people that don't normally play together. So yes, Joe, I do remember when you moved to town, when anybody comes to town, we're all so eager, and especially like, oh, he's sitting in with the Shamrock Jam, and he doesn't just play guitar, he plays percussion too. And I also remember that Hobo Fest that you came to, and because you had mentioned, oh, that woman singing, belting out those blues songs, and I do want to play this track by Mamie Minch. Mm-hmm. And just about that time, she was transitioning to presenting herself as an electric act. And I was sort of skeptical. I was like, I saw her in Brooklyn, New York, with the electric, with an electric setup, and it was too small of a room, and I felt like the drummer was stepping over her vocals. So I enlisted her to come up and play Hobo Fest with a recruited band, with a pickup band.
A local pickup band.
A local pickup right. band. Mm-hmm. Kyle Murray, which is one of your go-to people.
Oh, yeah.
It really centered around him, and he brought in Chris Shacklett as a bass player and Lowell Worcester as guested on harmonica. She met them that day. She rehearsed that day and presented a set. The song that we'll play, Razor Burn Blues, is her song.
All right, well, why don't we play that song, and we'll chat about it right afterwards. Okay, and we'll talk more of Hobofest.
This is a song for the ladies in the audience. It's about the things we do. We do.
Razor burn blues that cost me $10. Going down to see that mother for you. Holler, be strutting my stuff. I mean along the way. I'll be strutting my stuff, you know, along the way. I got the razor burn blues, everybody know. Come to see you, daddy. Got my Saturday clothes. And you always wearing your Tuesday overalls. And you always wearing your dirty old overalls. Oh, I've been zipped up, tucked in, pulled back. Touched up, perfume shined up, ripped off, flattened down, lowered down, chopped up, channeled through, shined up, smacked around, shut up, decorated, laminated, underappreciated. Swinging around, but you can take it and carry it all the way downtown. And I mean, I'm dying by the hour. Got the razor burn blues, I'm dying by the good Lord hour. Oh, I've been zipped up, tucked in, pulled back to room, then painted out, sucked in, brushed on, squeezed in, covered up, touched up, perfume shined up, ripped off, flattened down, lowered down, chopped up, jammed through, shined up, smacked around, shut up, and decorated, laminated, underappreciated. What? Swing it around, you can take it and carry it all the way downtown. And I mean dying by the hour. Got the razor burn blues, dying by the good Lord hour. I got those razor burn blues, it cost me $10. Going down to see that mother for you, holler. Now be strutting my stuff all along the way. I'll be strutting my stuff all along the good Lord way. I'll be strutting my stuff all along the good Lord way. One more time.
And that's Mamie Minch with Razor Burn Blues. And that was a recording from Hobofest, right? That was the recording, you know, of that first time that she came up, or the second time she came up?
It was actually the third time she came up. You know, the very first time, we only knew one member of the Roulette Sisters.
And Mamie Minch, by the way, was a member of the Roulette Sisters.
And I'm sorry, this is a little digression, Joe, but we'd heard... Oh, Pat McAvoy wants to have the Roulette Sisters at the radio station in tandem with the Blue Seed Studios concert. That was their first appearance. And I'm thinking, what, the classic rock station? Like, there's room for that? I just wasn't listening enough to know that some local personalities were actually shaping. They were working outside of recommended playlists.
Right.
And so, mind you, I only know one member of the band, Meg Reichhardt. And I'm meeting everybody else. As soon as they come into town, we hit the ground running. We have to get over to the radio station. And I'm a fly on the wall for, like, learning about this band, the Roulette Sisters, who do harmony vocals and sing vintage body songs and original songs. And anyways, it's just a marvel that that went across the airwaves. And I've even been in a, you know, at a checkout line when, before that, radio station changed over, and I just hear like a single track from that appearance. To fast forward The last time we had Mamie up was for the 10th Hobo Fest, which was the last Hobo Fest.
So Hobo Fest had a life of 10 years.
10 years. What an accomplishment. And, yeah. You know, to think that we used to go see live music, and let alone, you know, organize it and shape it. What an accomplishment for us,
yeah.
You know, collectively.
Okay, and who else have we got?
Well, there's this band, Tuba Skinny. They're actually a street band, but they have albums out, and they probably are a street band that graduated to playing festivals. Mm-hmm. And if you're in New Orleans, do look for them. They're a large ensemble, like 9 of them, and they play vintage New Orleans horn music. You know, they're so, like, casually hip, you know, that I remember when they came to play, it looks like they're dusty from, like, being on a wagon or something. I'm not out to make everybody happy, but I think Tuba Skinny is a band that makes me happy and makes everybody else happy.
Well, I was definitely taken by them when I saw them the first time. Yeah, they're fabulous.
So this is Gotta Give Me Some by Tuba Skinny.
Thank you.
So one thing I want to mention about this recording, we have a lot of these. If you like those recordings, just contact Joe, and we'll get a recording in your hands.
Yes, and you can contact me, as I've said before, at fromthehipradio@gmail.com. All right, Peter, so who else have we got?
Well, you know, there were so many great acts that came through Hobo Fest. One I would like to point out is a band that I think is like the quintessential indie band, in my estimation. So the Resonant Rogues, and they're from Asheville, North Carolina. And the Resonant Rogues are a partnership of a couple, Sparrow and Keith. And they employ various fiddle players and bass players, mm-hmm. and present as a quartet when they can.
And when you say the quintessential indie band, can you describe what exactly is an indie band?
Well, somebody who's not signed by a label.
So independent.
Yeah, so they are making it up on their own. So they're their own management, and they're ultimately responsible for their livelihood. Mm-hmm. And, you know, an indie band might have a day job, but when I said quintessential, that this is their livelihood. And with the pandemic shutdown, like, we were all concerned on so many fronts. But I was thinking of people like Sparrow and Keith, like, looking at, like, all their gigs getting canceled, having just bought a tour bus, and figuring out how they're going to, like, make it work. Mm-hmm. I really value artists on this scale as much as anybody on a bigger platform or national stage. Mm-hmm. And many of these acts that I've gotten to present at Hobo Fest, I really consider heroes. And, you know, how lucky am I that I've got to interact and build relationships with my heroes. Mm-hmm. They write their own material. Their material encompasses Americana, kind of going from bluegrass to country, jazz swing, and Eastern European flavors. So they've traveled to Europe and as far as Turkey, and they've incorporated that into their own original music.
Wonderful. And tell us about the song that you're going to play.
So this is the last track on their CD, Hands in the Dirt, and it's called Can't Come In. And rather than playing a live track, I wanted you to hear this one because I think I really love the sentiments of the plight of refugees that this song covers. And when we had them for the last Hobo Fest, the 10th Hobo Fest, we had Alan Simon guest on tabla. And Alan Simon is from Pakistan originally. They didn't know him. They didn't rehearse with him either. And so he just got on stage, you know, when it was time for him to get up there, and he played along to this song. And I later told the Resonant Rogues, you know, he was a refugee. It was really meaningful that he actually participated on this song.
Water hits the roof and rolls down to the ground beneath my toes. My favorite shoes are full of holes. They let the water. Another day does dawn. No, the night still lingers on. The mists morn and fall around. The clouds my body do surround. The silence amplifies the sound. My beating heart within. Though I am behind the times. Another day does dawn. Oh, the night still lingers on. another day does dawn. No, the night still lingers on.
And that's the Resident Rogues with Can't Come In. So I'm sitting here with Peter Seward talking about Hobo Fest, a festival here in Saranac Lake that lasted 10 years that Peter started and organized and worked very hard at, and it was quite successful.
For me, my real interest is the program. Mm-hmm. And here, I want people to like submit and pay attention to what's, you know, being offered.
People have definitely paid attention because of the acts like the Resident Rogues and that people would not normally see or normally hear about. Yet your musical taste can be a little quirky, and you would be bringing people in that people would not normally see, and they were attracted to them.
Yeah.
So it was a real gift that you brought with.
Yeah. I'm wanting to push the audience, you know, like lead the audience.
Wonderful. Okay, who should we have next?
Okay, so this band, Woody Pines, had been coming to our community to play first night, and go figure, bless his heart, Woody has these songs that are so on theme with Hobo Fest, and Woody Pines, he's a consummate showman. You know, he'll bring a soloist, you know, on guitar or horn player, and he's like a reliable rhythm guitarist, and he really, he's not quite a vaudeville performer, but he has that sensibility, quick wit, you know, very personable. But anyways, I was talking to him, and he said, yeah, I've been living down in the Dominican Republic, and it's really cheap down there, and I saw some live streaming events where he's, you know, looks like he's living a modest existence there, and he's trying to, you know, get people to drop some coins into his in his hat, you know, online. Mm-hmm. And I hope it's working out for him. Mm-hmm. So
I'd walk through desert fire, broken glass and barbed wire. I would do anything for love. I would jump from a bird, turn a cloud into a word. I would do anything for love. Yes, I'd travel to East Nashville to bring you the finest boots. Reach into a barn owl to grab you lots of hoots. I'd pinch Mike Tyson's cheek, be dodging punches for a week. I would do anything for love. Over thorns and broken wax, Miles Davis over burning tacks. I would do anything for love. Hold my breath till I turn blue. Ask Coltrane what he would do. I would do anything for love. We go up, up, up in a hot air balloon. We go down, down, down to a jumping saloon. We drink up, up, up all the sweet afternoon. We start out in July, then we finish up in June. Empty out my bank account, front row tickets at the Paramount. I would do anything for love. Broken wax, Miles Davis over burning tacks. I would do anything for love. Hold my breath till I turn blue. I'd ask Coltrane what he would do. I would do anything for love. I'd travel to Istanbul just to buy a sack of grain. Change the weather up over your head, baby, be your rain. Rain, 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 baby, be your rain, rain. Change the weather over your head, just to be your rain.
And that's Woody Pines, Anything for Love. All right, so who's next?
So I'd like to play Steve Langdon. You know, I've always said the event could have centered around Steve Langdon.
Who's a local guitar player and blues singer.
Yes, and so Steve plays country blues, and he's a great presentation and solo act. I was so flattered that he created this band, Biscuit Rollers, which only occasionally gets together and plays, but it premiered at Hobo Fest. So Ghosts on the AM Radio is Steve's song.
Here's Steve Langdon and the Biscuit Rollers.
It's a long ways from Odessa for one so fair. Spent my life on this highway, baby, tell me, how did you get here? She looked out the window and she said, Mister, I don't know. And I drove through the night across Texas listening to the ghosts on the AM radio. She spoke in a sleep in some syncopated rhyme about the elder days and some heinous crime deep in the desert where not but the coyotes roam. We passed right by Amarillo. We was followed by the ghosts on the AM radio. Sunrise without moving a muscle, man. She didn't even open her eyes. She said, when we get to Memphis, would you let me know? And morning broke across the Ozarks, quiet in the ghosts on the AM radio. Would you let me know. We drove through the night across Texas, followed by the ghosts on the AM radio. It's a long ways from Odessa for one so fair. Spent the night on highway, baby, tell me, how did you get here? Would you let me know? I drove through the night across Texas, followed by the ghosts on the AM radio. We drove through the night across Texas, followed by the ghosts on the AM radio.
So, Peter, what's on the horizon for you and in your talents as an impresario? Are you going to bring more acts to the area? And if so, where would you put them?
Well, since Hobo Fest and, you know, my little bit involvement in Music on the Green with you, we've been presenting music in our own space. And it really is the scale of a house concert. We have a mixed-use building which has a storefront space. And instead of having a tenant, we've used this this room as a platform for engaging the community. So we're specializing in acts that the other presenters wouldn't be presenting. And we also are presenting film and collaborating with the other people that have ideas for presentations. So looking at that in hindsight, you know, that was all when we used to gather in public spaces for events.
Right.
You know, going forward, I think there's still going to be a wariness about people's physical distance. So, you know, instead of getting 50 people in a room, if we were lucky, you know, I might need to limit it, you know, to be like 25 or mm-hmm. I plan to do some live event this summer from last year's grant funding,
mm-hmm.
but we'll be looking for opportunities and
right. Well, you're like me, and our brains never stop as far as creating in our minds what we would like to see happen and then work to make that happen. And the end product may not be exactly what had been dreamed, but it certainly is something that contributes to the community. Well, Peter Seward, good luck to you, and thank you so much for coming on Friendly Hip Radio.
Joe, I'm very impressed by your efforts in this community, and I am thankful for being part of your podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. All right.
Thank you.
Now that is nice. I played that as a surprise to Peter Seward. It was Bill Frisell with his version of Bob Dylan's Just Like a Woman. He's one of Peter's favorite musicians, having seen him in concert multiple times in and around New York City. Bill Frisell, before moving to Seattle, was a leading New York City jazz guitarist. But his solo shows include not only jazz, but folk, Americana, and even bluegrass and country. He's a composer and an arranger also, and I am grateful that Peter turned him on to me. Well, okay, folks, that's it for another show. I hope you enjoyed my 10th podcast. I'll be back in 4 weeks. So, in the meantime, I invite you to check out any of the first 10 shows that you may have missed. They're filled with great music, compelling interviews, and thoughtful commentary. Now, tonight, I thought I'd close by letting my friend and bandmate Jim Harrington play us out. You hear this intro piece on all my shows, and I thought you'd enjoy hearing the whole tune. So here's my band, Rhythm Road, with Jim Harrington on piano and accordion, Buddy Thomas on guitar, Kevin Walsh on bass, and me, once again, on percussion. This is Jim Harrington's composition, Testing the Waters. See you again soon.